Welcome back to another episode of the NXT Roundtable, episode number 25. My name is Michael Farah, and if you listening to this are part of the Inside the Ropes fan community, I've been upgraded to monitor, so I own you bitches now. Innes isn't here this week, so the only person joining me right now, he is a contributor to ITRWrestling.com, and if you catch the Inside the Ropes Twitter account every Monday night for Raw, you will see his musings as he grimaces through it and tries to find a solitary positive thing to say about Monday Night Raw. Otherwise, Kenny McIntosh will have him removed from the account. It is Liam Stewart. Liam, how are you?
Yeah, so when I got offered to live cover wrestling, I said NXT top pick, Raw bottom pick, and then Innes kind of wormed his way into the middle two. So because I got my top pick, I got my bottom pick, and it kind of balanced out. And I was like, I know Raw's not good, but it can't be that bad. And it's not even that it's like, oh, this is horrible. Like, oh, like, it's not fun bad. It's just boring.
It's so dull.
Fucking boring. Like, we're recording this Monday morning, British Standard Time, so the night after Raw, before Hell in a Cell. And, the opening hour was fine. Retribution did kind of get buried. But they had a cool little promo later on where Mustafa did his best to claw them back. Mercedes is not a part of them, which is exceptional. That should mean that she's coming back to NXT.
Yay.
Asuka Lana was 4 minutes, but competitive within those 4 minutes, which was horrible. But then kind of around the middle, just nothing happened. Like, we had, like, the genuine highlights were a promo from Mustafa, a promo from The Miz, and El Gran Gordo, also known as Otis Dozovich, pretending not to be Otis, which was just nice and fun. Yeah. Other than that, it was hard. But, you know, I've found my niche with engagement in terms of the slightly edgy jokes, but not full dev pod edgy jokes. Innes only found out yesterday that we do in fact have an episode called The Beast of Belfast versus The Beaster of Children, and Keith kind of chuckled for about 12 minutes straight. But no, I'm excited to talk about a show that for the most part I do enjoy. I do have to stay up tomorrow night and also live cover that, but you know, that's not too bad. The only issue is I have work at 6 a.m. I never get opens, never get morning shifts. But immediately as soon as I agreed to start doing this with ITR, I got 3 weeks of them in a row. And it means that, like, NXT finishes at 3, and I have to be up for work at 4:15. So,
I don't understand how you do that. That is completely awful. I am, like, week 8 of unemployment, we'll say, it's going great. I said, maybe I'll tune in for a little bit of Raw in, like, kind of solidarity in the fact that you have to watch it and everything, but you're too busy to chat about it. So Day and I were on a VC, and we had Raw on, like, the audio of Raw was playing, but nothing was happening, so we didn't watch it. We just kept playing different, like, going online and searching 300 different would you rather scenarios.
God.
Which, some of them got dark. But that now is not the time for that. We do not do a would you rather podcast. That is a terrible idea, because it would just turn into, I don't even know what it would turn into. Probably illegal activity. But yes.
Pretty sure they did a film called Would You Rather. Like a horror film based around the concept of it. I think it was dreadful. I feel like it was probably dreadful. You get, like, a lot of dreadful horror films.
Yeah, like, it's an interesting concept, but if you just get someone who just does it badly, then no one's going to touch it again.
Yeah.
What is happening in the news, seeing as you are the news?
So I figured we'd just talk about three stories that relate to NXT. for the most part, because I feel like that's probably more interesting for our new Canadian audience.
Sure.
Looking at the upgraded Podomatic stats, the latest episode did 115 downloads in a week, right, with a large majority of that coming from Canada. So, hi to our Canadian audience.
You are my favourite of the North America. You are my favourite of the North American countries.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So, I think the best thing to start things off is with a little bit of, like, what the fuckery. Mm. Because Tino Sabatelli appeared on an episode of AEW Dark following his release from NXT. And the idea was that he was going to sign and that he was going to be one of AEW's new projects. You know, they thought he was good. He had some skills to make things work. But on the latest episode of Monday Night Live, Fightful managing editor Sean Rossat discussed Sabatelli's re-signing with the WWE and how people in AEW believe that Tino Sabatelli was released and sent to AEW to leak information on the tapings in order to ruin the live results of AEW. On the recent episode of Chris Jericho's Saturday Night Special, he called out an NXT reject for leaking information on the pre-recordings of AEW Dynamite. So, putting two together, it's pretty much been confirmed that Sabatelli was a spy and that he's never going to go back in AEW. So, the GOAT is angry at the GOAT, I guess.
I am so confused at this. What a, like, the stuff that he was leaking, you said there was, like, results and kind of things from some live tapings or whatever. But was it, like, was it for anything consequential? Was it just a random taping? Was it just, like, because
just a series of tapings?
Like, Look, conspiracy theories are always going to run wild and everything. And, like, I just don't buy the fact that WWE would release an NXT person, send them to AEW for 1 week just to get one lot of results spoiled.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like a lot of effort for not a lot of reward.
Plus, surely WWE would recall when WCW tried to do that with them by leaking that Mankind was going to win the world title. Mm. And then it just led to a mass flood of people going over to check out the WWF at the time.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting one. It does mean that Tino Sabatelli has re-signed, which is a thing.
I mean, he was one of the projects in Breaking Ground, and so was Aaliyah.
Yeah, what a show. What a show.
It was a great show. They should do another series of it because it was really, really good.
1,000%.
But Tino was always, you know, he was the football player, he was the rich guy, all that kind of stuff, and that was the story of him. But then he got injured and was out for well over a year. It seems like he's been a project of theirs for now well over 5 years. I don't know, and he hasn't really done anything. Oh, he did something with Riddick Moss. There was a little tag team there for a hot minute, but that's about it. Like, people get up about Aaliyah a lot, like how they've consistently tried and tried with her over and over and over again, and nothing's happened, and she's been there so long, yada yada yada. But Tino Sabatelli has been in the system for so long and has done maybe 20% of what Aaliyah has done, and at some point you gotta ask, why are we persisting with him? Is he that much of a star that they think that he is? It's an odd one.
Yeah, it's not even like with Aaliyah where you can consider this idea that there's a smaller pool of women's performers that WWE are kind of able to to access.
Mm.
Like, Riddick Moss is not Riddick Moss, well, they seem to love Riddick Moss pre his injury. But Timo Sabatelli is literally, like, nothing special. I guess he's jacked.
Yeah, so, but so are a lot of people, so...
Yeah, it's just such a weird one, you know? I can't quite quantify what it is that would make him stick around in, like, this revamped NXT that we're kind of seeing at the moment. But it's an interesting one. In terms of, like, strange call-ups as well, literally last night on Raw, Jordan Omagobahan, the Raw Underground Bodyguard, an NXT signee, original Performance Center signee, is now AJ Styles' bodyguard, so I quite enjoyed that, to be fair. It's interesting to see what they're doing with people.
He is a... what is his height? He is a giant man, but
according
his height...
to Google, he is 7'3".
That is so probably really like, fucking tall.
So probably like 6'2 in real height.
Okay, but like if he is 7'3", he would be taller than Carly. Like, yeah. He's an...
But he's like a filled out 7'3 as well. Like,
yeah.
He's buff. He's not unable to walk.
Yeah. let's maybe... I don't know what he's like in the ring or anything like that, but generally those people are not great. So, like, just as history has shown us before, people of that height are just, like you're great at basketball, usually, when you're that high, but, like, that's...
Life was a basketball player.
Shocking. I'm absolutely shocked by that. But it looked interesting, seeing the height difference between AJ and the big dude. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, not gonna give it a go.
I just find it funny, because it looks like it goes... It looks like his name is Behen, and they're going, "Oh my god, Behen!" So,
because he was the big ninja and the Raw Underground bodyguard.
Yeah.
And I would like just to reiterate, I said big ninja, NINJA. But
not that he's pointing that out for any reason at all, of course.
No. I also... Raw Underground's dead, isn't it? It's dead.
Yes, reportedly, yeah. I know, yeah.
Well, that was a fun 6 weeks, wasn't it? That was...
Yeah, some might say, in fact, pointless.
Some might say a pointless rating grab that didn't last. It might have been us 6 weeks ago, who knows?
So I actually couldn't remember what the second piece of news we were going to cover was, but I have remembered that there's... since we last recorded, the PWI Women's 100 that has been released and features many of NXT's stacked women's division, including NXT alumni in the top six. Everyone is an NXT alumni, with the top six being Bayley, Becky, Asuka, Charlotte, Sasha. You then get a little bit of AEW representation with Hikaru Shida at 6, Riho at 8. Tessa Blanchard sits at 7, Mayu Awatani, at 10. And can I guess, most shockingly, given that, like, obviously it's a kayfabe list, so it takes into account achievements and things like that, Io Shirai is only at number 9. Which, I'm fairly sure she's achieved more this year than Becky, who's been away for half of it. And Tessa, who... has been away for, like, most of it.
Well, no, I think Becky's where she probably should be, because it's either from October to October or November to November. It's one of the two. And from October until May, she was women's champion. So she's really only been gone for maybe a quarter of the judging period. And then you have Charlotte who again has been away, but also she won the Rumble, won the NXT women's title, that kind of thing. So she's where she probably should be. Yeah. Io Shirai maybe should be a little bit higher. Maybe the October to May period for her was a little bit quiet. But also, the women's division in AEW is non-existent, so I don't understand the highness of them. I guess...
So, I've got the full list here, and I was looking, because you usually get some fun names that sneak in.
Yeah.
Aaliyah's not in it, which of course I am livid about, given that someone like Holly Dead is, or Jodie Threat, who existed on the UK indie scene for about 5 minutes. But we get Indy Hartwell in at number 83.
Love it.
Solo Darling, who I saw the worst venue I've ever been at. One of your own, Shazza McKenzie, in at number 62. Billy Shazza Kay, number 59.
Shazza McKenzie likes my TikToks, by the way. Just saying.
Natalia at number 53. NXT UK superstar Amal at 51. Shotzi Blackheart up at 46, followed by Toni Storm immediately at 45. Former WWE NXT superstar Nicole Savoy at 40. Candice LeRae at 34. Mercedes Martinez at 29. Tegan Knox at 26. Dakota Kai 24. Kaylee Ray at 18, despite the fact she's been NXT UK Women's Champion all year. Shayna Baszler, Jordan Grace, Rhea Ripley just miss out on the top 10. So,
You would think Rhea Ripley would have maybe made the top 10, but I mean...
Yeah, I guess the fact she lost at Mania probably... Like, I'm always interested to see how their calculation goes for the kayfabe list, but...
Yeah, because I think... Because, like, with Rhea as well, she... You know, she won War Games, she won the women's title from Shayna and all that kind of stuff. So she had that incredible
and most
run.
Most of that started October, December time as well, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an interesting choice. I remember the other thing that you were going to mention that we were going to talk about. Is women's related. Oh, by the way, one thing when you said about those extra things, I was talking. I was. Listening to ITR, and they were saying how you can also buy your way onto the PWI list if you so want to as well.
Really?
Yes. Like, obviously, you know, after a while, like, they legitimately score the top, and then, like, once you get down to the bottom few, suddenly, like, you can do a little bit of persuasion to get your name chucked in there, because at that point, who's measuring, like, especially in the PWI 500. But the other thing you're going to mention is women's related. It's Eva Marie. Eva Marie is back.
Of course. Yeah, so in an exclusive by Cultaholic, have no issue crediting them with a exclusive. They're nice chaps. It's been confirmed backstage that Eva Marie is set to return imminently, and there was rumours it could have been at last week's Raw. It wasn't, but it's set to be happening soon. It looks to be main roster, even though the best sort of run of Eva was that NXT anti-wrestler character that then evolved onto main roster. But she's had a complete, like, body transformation. She's now ripped as shit, I believe the professionals say.
Yes.
She's gone from promoting, like, tummy juice or, like, tummy tea to, like, owning her own fashion and fitness brand. I think it's called Natty something or something similar to that, like, E-N-T. But I think it's actually probably a really good re-signing. Like, she's not the greatest professional wrestler of all time, but one, she's now athletically much better, which will help her ability to get better in ring. But also, she was like the original diva character, and in fact, she was like the original influencer in terms of like being out there promoting stuff, hair extensions, all of that. She's basically Lana but likable. because I can't stress this enough, Lana is possibly the most, at least the way she portrays herself on social media, which is obviously completely different to how people are as individuals. This is an attack on the person behind Lana. I'm specifically talking about the character of Lana. Comes across like a cunt on social media. Fucking TikTok dances and the fucking bang energy and all of that shit. Oh,
see, Eva is such an interesting one, because I nobody liked her in the beginning because of what she represented. She represented total divas. She didn't earn her way there. She won a non-existent diva search, that kind of thing. But then NXT happened, and it's not like that she put on amazing matches, but everyone talks about her match with Bayley, that while it wasn't a technical classic, but it was like a masterclass in storytelling and shenanigans and everything to accentuate a positive and hide a weakness. It was, working with the characters you have, and it was really, really good. She then went to the main roster, did that weird thing just before the WrestleMania, that was odd, and then she got drafted to SmackDown and did about 4 weeks worth of appearances with her disembodied voice intro from Concord, California. It comes the most stylish. Like, it was so good. I was actually watching those entrances earlier today. They're phenomenal. And it was just got a shame because that one got cut so short and we didn't get a conclusion to what that story was going to be because she got suspended, then wasn't used for a year, and then she left. So my ideal scenario is that they return to that exact character that she had, because her last on-screen wasn't even appearance, but her last on-screen mention was SummerSlam of that year. And in that thing, and in that entrance where she comes out and she says that she's not going to be there and she gets replaced by Nikki Bella, the voice is like, Eva Marie is not here tonight due to, and will not be appearing tonight due to backlash from hostile WWE fans. She will be holidaying in the British Isles or whatever. I want her to come back 4 years later and be like, yeah, I was just on holiday for 4 years. Now I'm back. Like, that kind of thing. I want that. I don't want her wrestling. I want Eva, the character, the robotic character that she is.
My ideal situation that will never happen is Eva Marie, Robert Stone brand. Match made in heaven. NXT has a stacked women's division that is built on legitimate in-ring talent. And then having Aaliyah and Eva Marie just start shit-housing wins with Robert Stone, then going on to win the tag titles in the most bullshitty way, avoiding wrestling, like, comedic little skits, like, wardrobe malfunction, stuff like that. The wardrobe malfunction does mad clicks on YouTube because wrestling fans are perverts.
That one video of the wardrobe malfunction from SmackDown has, like, 43 million views. It's a ridiculous number. And they tried to replicate that with Alexa Bliss, like, last year or the year before or something like that.
And that still did mad things.
It did
mad things. I wrote the ITR Wrestling article on, like, covering the Cultaholic announcement. And on Facebook, that had 350,000 engagements.
People
I put the majority of that down to two things. Yeah. People like to hate things.
Yes.
And it's a really thing for, like, group hate. And also, I used the photo of her with breasticles in NXT.
Naturally.
And wrestling fans are perverts. Yeah.
Very smart. But also, people love to have an opinion on Eva Marie, especially Eva Marie. Like, people who said, like, John Cena and Roman Reigns are one of the most controversial figures in wrestling history. An argument could be made that Eva Marie should be in that conversation as well, because she's brought up so much conversation, and she's also got the mainstream appeal from her Total Diva stuff. Is Total Diva still a thing? I don't know. Maybe they'll sign her up to do that again. We're not sure.
I'm fairly sure she did, like, dancing, like, like the American version of, like, Strictly Come Dancing or something.
Dancing with the Stars or something, yeah.
Yeah, and she's done films with, like, Bruce Willis and things now. Like, she's she's not The Rock.
No,
but she is a like, not a household name, but, like, maybe, like, a one in every five people you ask will know Eva Marie.
Yeah, maybe.
And I'm not entirely sure anyone else on that Raw women's roster or SmackDown women's roster can kind of boast that. Like,
I think because I remember she made because she was in Australia earlier this year or late last year promoting her fitness shit, and she made Australian headlines that year because she posted a photo about how she got refused entry to, like, the Qantas lounge, which is, like, the first class lounge, because she was wearing activewear. And, like, she said it was discrimination on social media, and then it turned into a huge thing. We did a talk topic about that exact story and name-checked her and everything on my, what I used to have a radio show. And it's, like, she's just a name that they can, leech off of. So, like, whether you like her or not, business-wise, it's a smart re-signing.
And from her point of view, she gets more in the public eye. That's good for her individual projects. So,
What else is she gonna do in 2020? She's like, if she's her base is Florida, why not go to work down the road or something?
Yeah,
that's
a very fair point. So we were gonna cover one last news story, but the preface for this is Retourna will be coming back. We just need to organize time.
Yeah.
I have set these off now, so it's gonna be a lot easier. But we figured this was a nice little news story to wrap up before we go into NXT. It covers both NXT and Retourna, or Retro TNA, because everyone's favourite little old man, genuinely nice, Eric Bischoff, said on the latest 83 Weeks podcast, which you should listen to this instead, but it's a good podcast. Bischoff basically said that NXT is not as good as TNA in its prime. The quote is that, "I don't think NXT is as good as TNA was when TNA was at its peak. Now at its peak, it is subjective, right? Some people like TNA when it first started because it's new, and I get that. A lot of people liked it because it did feel different at the very beginning. Some people like the smaller presentation more than anything. Everybody loves the competitor, right? Because you get your hopes up and you start getting interested in new, fresh characters you hadn't seen before. So, with us having covered both, and we've kind of seen TNA at its prime, I don't think he's wrong. That's not to say I think he's right, but I think, and I've said this on podcasts and on Twitter before, I think prime TNA is still more of a true challenger to WWE than AEW was. AEW just has the larger platform for it. I don't see AEW ever usurping WWE, but for a while I could see TNA doing it. I think in terms of in-ring quality, you could argue that the period of NXT we've just come out of, like the Gargano, Black, Ricochet, Cole period, in terms of in-ring quality, that and peak TNA with Daniel, Styles, Joe was probably on top. But I actually think it's a complete show. I think it's pretty even, because for everything you can credit TNA with, I can kind of just respond with NXT Women's Division versus No Knockouts Division for the most part early on. So, I think he has a point.
It's a very interesting question to ask, because I think it depends on the kind of wrestling fan you are. It depends on what you're looking for. That also depends on what you think TNA's peak is too. So, for example, people may really prefer the star era of TNA, where you had Angle, Sting, Booker, Steiner, Kevin Nash, all these people around. Or they may prefer the earlier years of TNA with AJ and Joe and Christopher Daniels and Abyss and those people. But NXT, and then you compare it to where you think... Are we just talking NXT as of right now? Because NXT is not at its peak at the moment. So, top peak TNA versus off-peak NXT, there's a bit of differentiating to do there. I think NXT and TNA have very similar, I guess, spots in my heart, in my wrestling fandom, because as I started to watch TNA way back when, it was when I was falling out of love with WWE at the time, and TNA was there to catch me. So when I was falling out of love with WWE about 5 or 6 years later, NXT was there to catch me. They both had extra things that I was looking for as a fan that I wanted at the time. They both have their great stories, they both have their bad stories. Though TNA had some really bad stories.
I think the difference there is TNA's bad stories were like offensively bad, Exhibit Blackface and Voodoo Kim Mafia, whereas TNA's bad stories are boring. I think's the difference.
Yeah,
like they were both bad, but it's different styles of bad. One, you can see that the intent is still to be good, and the other one just feels like, I guess, a sign of the times. To be fair,
It is an interesting thing to ask, and I think people who have seen both will have different answers to that as well. So, oh, it's very interesting, and it's one that we could do probably a whole podcast on, but let's not at the moment because we're barely getting this one out. I would love to see more people talk about that this over the next few, like, people of like credibility talk about that and see what they have to say about NXT versus peak TNA.
It is also worth noting that what Bischoff describes as peak TNA is before he started ruining it. So at least he's not stubborn. I've got that slight bias from like things I've said with Kenny and like the fact that I now get to engage with Bischoff on Twitter, which is strange. But he comes across like in the same way that I think Heyman does, very likable. As opposed to someone like Brother Love. That feels like a good place to wrap up the news. We've had a nice little discussion about half an hour in. It leaves us a good half an hour to talk about NXT, I believe, 425? Yes.
Yes, something like that.
Episode 425 of NXT that emanated live from the Capitol Wrestling Center in Orlando, Florida. The pre-announced sort of focus of the show was the return of Toni Storm, Dexter Lumis and Ember Moon, letting us know their intentions in NXT. I thought including Dexter Lumis with the other two was an odd choice. By the start of the show, we knew that we were going to have the North American title match and two number one contender matches. Not a lot announced in advance, and it should be worth noting this went up against AEW's 1 year anniversary show, which I would throw over to Innes to cover, but he's currently in a Zoom call for uni. So, based off his Twitter, was actually quite a bad show, and he was very disappointed. And apparently, the women's match was like laughable.
Yeah, I just came off listening to Inside the Ropes and listening to Kenny and Sondra absolutely tear it to shreds, because I haven't watched the show, so I haven't seen the match, so I can't comment on how bad the match was, but if I'm seeing multiple people say it's bad, I'm sure it was. I think also, before we also get into it, we don't want to go into a huge diatribe about the AEW Women's Division, we've done that a lot, but like, I saw an article recently of Britt Baker talking, who's the only shining light in that division, who commenting about asking them to basically trying to make, I guess, kind of trying to make excuses for the AEW Women's Division because half their roster were international, so half their roster's gone, and then she went down, and so did Chris Statlander, so they went down, and it all comes down to, well, okay, yes, that's a shit spot to be in, but also no attempt has been made for story. So, and she's saying, look, if you want the women's division to get better, please don't change the channel when the women's division is on. Otherwise, we won't get more time that way. And while I hear what she's saying, and I do understand that train of thought, AEW has to actually want to put effort into the women's division and actually has to make a story and tell a story rather than just this chick from Japan's gonna face this chick this week and then another one next week and then, oh, she'll be off for 3 weeks and then maybe she'll sit in the crowd the week after.
What I think is noticeable as well is that it's not even, so like, for example, we've just finished the G1, right? I always stand by, even if you don't know New Japan, if you watch some of the best matches from the G1 and it's just two random dudes fighting, the matches are still good enough to keep your investment. If I'm not invested in your characters because you're not developing them well and not giving them time to grow, the matches need to be fucking shit hot. Mm. And they're just not. Because you also can't be a shit hot match in like 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're a Leah and your thing is getting beat up for 6 minutes,
mm.
there's not a lot you can do. And I get, like, yeah, they might not want to do it if you're not retaining things, but that's kind of their misunderstanding of symptom and, like, cause. I shouldn't have to sit and watch something that's bad in order for it to get better, you know?
Exactly.
But we luckily get to cover NXT, which has a shit hot women's division.
Oh my god, there's so many good things.
But we actually kick things off with the tag division, arguably NXT's worst division, and one you have to give to AEW on that one.
Mm.
Because we get the Undisputed Era defeating Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch to become number one contenders for Breeze Angle's Tag Team Championship. First thing it is worth noting, as I'm going to sneeze, so I'm just going to quickly mute.
Go ahead. Oh, that was attractive to look at.
We get a pre-match promo from Kyle, not Adam. Adam is still selling the broken ribs sustained by Ridge Holland. And he comes to the ring with the two competitors, Fish and Strong. O'Reilly confirms he will be clear next week, but Cole's future is less certain. Kyle is pretty much the leader here, and he's very confident in speaking. It's kind of a face, like, promo.
Yeah.
They address Ridge Holland and say that it doesn't matter that you blew your knee out, you were ending up in a bed, a hospital bed anyway. And this is where we get to say Ennis was right. Because they say that they're going to find out who compensated Holland for attacking Cole at TakeOver.
Yeah.
So when Ennis said last week that he interpreted it as someone bought him a Lamborghini for attacking Cole, he was right. So we now have a mystery whodunit angle.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great flip, because like it's a great jackknife kind of turn into what the story was maybe going to be originally. Like, maybe it was a more subtle thing to begin with, but they may have accidentally fallen into this story that they set up unknowingly. So I commend them on being able to switch the story, and like, it sucks for Ridge Holland, because I'm sure he was going to get something out of this other than the Lamborghini. And which I know wasn't his, but come on. It sucks for him, but I think, yeah, being able to pivot the story is a very, very lucky thing that they've set up here. Very lucky indeed.
Yeah, it's worked out quite well. Lorcan and Burch focus early on an isolating Fish from Strong, targeting the back to take away the power of the strikes. There was a really nice near fall where Lorcan and Burch managed to make their assisted Randy Orton DDT look good, because Strong just spiked himself straight on the head, which was nice. However, Strong hits Lorcan with a jumping knee strike, and what I really liked from commentary here, and I must say I think commentary was phenomenal, specifically Wade Barrett throughout the show, was incredible, because they addressed the fact that that is the same jumping knee strike that broke Oney Lorcan's orbital bone back in 2018 at TakeOver. And I just love that little bit of tying it together, that little bit of, like, micro storytelling.
Yeah. No one would have remembered that. I didn't remember that. But the fact that they can bring that up into it just shows, like, and the thing is, that's just a little bit of extra research that either Wade Barrett or someone has provided to him from when he wasn't in WWE at the time, and I'm sure wasn't watching at the time. So it's very well done. Very well done. I will commend them on that. The match was good. I enjoyed it. Undisputed Era winning is fine. It's expected. But I just, I'm really, and I know it's a different combination of Undisputed Era, but like, them just being in the tag title scene all the time is growing thin, and I know you don't really have many other options at the moment. I understand that. But I just, oh, Undisputed Era as tag champs again just doesn't interest me. And I say that because I'm concerned for Breezango next week. I really am. My heart is on the line. My heart's in my throat at the moment.
See, you say you're concerned for them next week. I would like to, is it this week coming? Or
Halloween Havoc? No, they're defending it next week before Halloween Havoc.
Oh, I was going to say you get to see them in fancy dress at Halloween.
Nope, they didn't put it on Halloween Havoc, which also is another bone of contention for me.
Yeah, I kind of think this mystery financier is going to be strong and fish. Mm-hmm. I don't think O'Reilly is turning heel. I think we've seen O'Reilly be fantastic as a babyface, grown from strength to strength. And I'll be honest, kind of just want to see him as a single star because he's so fucking good.
Mm.
But yeah, the match itself was good. It was fine. Breezango at ringside watching with the titles was good. Like turning around and waving to people on the screens, that was nice. I just weirdly, this is two teams that I feel that need to split up. Like I've been a big fan of the stuff Breezango have been doing, but I can't help but think that there's so much mileage and a proper blood feud between those two. Shifting it to a serious tone. But also, yeah, they just have no tag teams. Like, the women's division has more tag teams without a tag belt than... Also, just to go on a slight tangent, I don't know who in WWE thought, right, we want to put Peyton Royce as a single star, so we're going to break up the Iconics.
Oh, shit.
Oh, we need a tag team. Just put Peyton Royce and Lacey Evans together. They're blonde.
They tried their best trying to look like they were upstaging each other. The entrance, they gave it all.
Yeah.
They gave it a really good effort. But, like, it just, like, there is no excuse for splitting up the Iconics if you're just going to put Peyton Royce back in the tag division. What a fucking idiotic decision.
I think it's interesting to see as well that Cole is being kept away from TV for a little bit. I think that's nice. I think he was getting overexposed. Like, we were getting overexposed to him on NXT. And if they're not going to call him up, they can keep him away until we get the reveal of who this attacker was. And we can go from there. A clean victory for Undisputed Era. Kind of mainly clean suits their shift towards a more face team for now. This does, however, feel like Undisputed versus Breezango for legitimately the 100th time.
You say that. How many times have they done this, though? They've only done it a couple.
I think they've been in multi-man matches a lot as well for, like, number one contenders, because there was one where Indus Share
and them
as well. We do, however, and we'll talk about it a bit later on, get the addition of a team I would love to see wrestle Breezango. And I never thought I'd be saying that, but we'll get there. First, we get an update on Finn Balor's injury. He's had surgery. It was successful. The injuries still appear worse than originally feared. Regal decides that they're going to wait and see a couple weeks after the surgery to see if they're going to vacate the title or not, because Finn Balor gets special treatment over Karrion Kross, which is bullshit. They're desperate not to have to vacate that title again.
It would really suck if they had to do that again. I hope that they don't have to, because it would be disastrous for them. Because, like, we used to say that the Cruiserweight title was cursed. It might be the NXT title that's cursed.
I also don't know. I don't know who at that point you could put it on. Like,
oh god, do you just give it to Kyle?
Here you go. Fucking Velveteen Dream or some shit like that.
Alright, what we're going to do, we're going to do a triple threat Iron Man match. we're just going to keep doing it until
Theory, Dream, and can we get Devlin over? Let's get Devlin over.
I thought you were going to draft in Riddle.
He's too busy literally pretending to be scared. It was fun.
I think it's a problem if they do have to vacate again. If, like, worst case, they have to vacate again, give it a Johnny. Give it a Gargano. Why not at this point? That's probably my pick that they give it to.
I still think the end goal at this point is Demon versus Cross.
Yes.
At the Mania weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's still a damn shame that, because there's a real possibility with a Fiend on Raw now that he could win the world title. And if that was to happen, say, before Survivor Series, we could have got Cross versus The Fiend.
Mm.
And Roman refusing to do that match would have suited his character perfectly as well. So, hopefully Finn's fine and we can get back to having a world title that can actually get stories tied in without injury.
Yeah.
Although, there is an update set to come today on Karrion's injury. He's doing weights and things again, so it shouldn't be too long. Someone who is just back from injury, however, is Ember Moon. And she is here to talk to us about her return to NXT. Describes 2019 as the worst year of her life. She clearly hasn't seen much of 2020.
Yeah.
She says that she knew as soon as she was cleared she wanted to come home to NXT. States she knows she cannot rely on what she was to get to the top of an incredible division, and thus she's going to go through everyone to get there. And she names like people like Lacey Lane, Casey Catanzaro, Shotzi, and Rhea Ripley.
Who's Lacey Lane is not her name anymore.
Yeah, Kaden Carter. but it's like, it's very clear that she's face and she's just warning everyone she's going to beat them all and then take that title. But her demeanor's changed.
Mm.
Like, she still looks like post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
But I think we might even said last week, she looks like she's gone from vampire to vampire hunter sort of thing. And she's very confident, but like not cocky, and she's very self-assured. And I really liked this promo. I thought it was really good, and it got me excited for a lot of potential matchups.
Yeah, it's what was necessary with Ember coming back to NXT. She needed to explain why she came back. So I'm glad we got that explanation pretty much straight away, because we've had her do the promo, the welcome back promo. We've had her in ring doing her thing, and she's done really good at it. Really good. She was really good in her return. So now we just needed the explanation, and we got that explanation now, which is fantastic. So all about Ember being back in the ranks, because we didn't actually lose anyone in the draft. So really, the NXT Women's Division is just super duper stacked right now.
Yeah, especially like we get Tony a bit later on, and it's just give them the tag belts.
Give them the tag belts.
Up next, we have Jake Atlas taking on Ashanti Adonis. The two exchanged very short, fast paced sequence of moves, basically trying to one up each other with like cruiserweight flippy style offense. And I started to really get into this match because we've seen Atlas start to twiddle a little bit with like the heel side since that beatdown with Ciampa, similar to Kushida, where like he's still presented as a face at the moment, but like it looks like they've prepared. If this is like Total Extreme Wrestling, they've set the prepare button for turn so that they can click it when they need to. But before the match can get into full swing, Legado del Fantasma appear to try and distract Ashanti Adonis. Obviously, Ashanti came out to help Swerve at TakeOver. Atlas takes advantage, picking up the win via roll up. Legado del Fantasma trying to do a post-match beatdown on Adonis. But a big suicide dive from Atlas makes the save. Escobar comes down to sort of restore the numbers advantage for Legado del Fantasma, but then Swerve Scott comes down. It's just built into like a six-man tag match, and it's pretty self-explanatory, right?
Yeah, I really don't have much to say about this. It's just building to another Legado del Fantasma six man, which we've seen a few of these before, which makes sense. They're stable, so it makes sense that they build to these matches quite a bit. And people who don't really have allies are going to establish alliances in order to take out the people with the most people on their team. Very stock standard, paint by numbers, story. While we are talking about the cruiserweight division, fuck it, let's talk about it. Jordan Devlin's back on NXT UK. Yeah. And yeah. did a promo. There was a promo video. It's about 2 minutes long. It's phenomenal. Because
he does have a proper "I did something wrong" beard going on.
He talks about the fact that the branding of the tournament changed, and you can see, and they show like the deleting of the interim from the tournament and all that kind of stuff. And he basically he's still holding the title, and he says if that thing over there, that replica, means nothing over there. If you want this belt, you're gonna have to send someone over here to come get it from me. That kind of thing. So it looks like that you're gonna start building two separate cruiserweight divisions, one on NXT UK, one on NXT. They're going to basically feud over the internet or Zoom or Thunderdome or whatever until they can come together again. But that excites me because I don't want to be the one to say it, kind of getting over Legado del Fantasma.
They've completely dropped the ball with it. Completely.
And the thing is, I'm not super on board with Swerve either. Like, I know he's good, but he's just Swerve.
In ring, he is incredible. And, like, that match against Gargano, for example, at Takeover for Great American Bash?
Great American Bash, yeah.
Was really good. But he is just Isaiah Swerve Scott at the moment. I don't know his motivations. I don't know his driving factors. I don't know where he wants to be. I do know that I'm fairly certain Atlas turns heel, whether that's aligning with LDF or just turning on the other two to go his own way.
Mm.
I feel like that's where this is going. But I actually just would have liked to see this match.
Mm.
Like, it was starting to get really exciting, and then it just ended up leading into another multi-man match that will probably get announced as like a six-man street fight at Halloween Havoc or for next week, and I'm a bit done with them.
I'm sure Tony Storm spent the majority of 2020 in the UK or something like that.
Japan, I think.
Japan or something. Anyway, they've imported her back into the country. I don't want Legado. I don't want Santos Escobar losing the title because even though it's heel versus heel, I'd rather see Devlin versus Escobar as the match and everything.
Yeah.
So it just depends on how long you reckon that they maybe get Devlin over to the US to come be part of it again, whether it's in January, whether it's, you know, whether it's in a couple months time or something like that. Because it seems like in order for the cruiserweight division to move forward properly, they need to tie up this loose end here. And they can build to it subtly. They can build to it, but like they do need to tie it up at some point in the not too distant future.
I think the actual main problem is that obviously Devlin doesn't stay in the UK, but rather Ireland. And Ireland, have much like Wales, have just gone into a local lockdown for 2 weeks.
True.
So he can't leave the house for 2 weeks. Mm.
What does this mean for NXT UK, by the way? Because if we're going back into
England, it's just Ireland and Wales.
Oh, okay.
Scotland are still. We did a, I think they're called circuit breakers. Basically, anywhere that sells alcohol is not allowed to be open, and the only thing that is like cafes or cafes, and they're only allowed to have people in between 6 and 6, so the sort of quieter times. Other than that, it's takeaways only and like shops and things like that. Hmm. So there's less people out at the moment because my work's been slightly less busy, which is lovely.
Yeah,
but it feels like we're gonna if they want Christmas to be able to be normal so that they can get all that sweet Christmas money from shops and things, we'll probably need like a 2-week lockdown around November. Which if it ruins my birthday, I will be very annoyed because me and Issa and our friend Thomas have just started the Discord Dining Club, So every Friday we're gonna go to a sort of like proper nice restaurant, sort of like that 50 to £60 per person range. And of 3 weeks of the four in a month, we'll go and each time one person will pick and they pay. So you only pay for one out of three, but you pay for everyone the time you go. So, two times of the 3 of the month, you get a free meal and a free, like, free proper meal, but one time you get stung with a bill. And we want to start that once the circuit breaker's over, because the restaurants will be back open. And the second week of that would be the day before my birthday, which is like perfect timing. But that also is when I'd imagine we would put in the fucking 2 week lockdown, and I will be so pissed. But I feel, I'm pretty sure getting Devlin to America once Ireland's out of lockdown is pretty simple, because America's open.
Yeah, and like they do not care. So it's just a matter of
Yeah,
it.
so it's all you need to do is make sure he is flying from a country that also do not care. So you just shove him on a boat from Ireland to fucking London, and then boom, you're sorted. Because I think the issue with like Tony and stuff was Japan was closed off, so you needed to get her from Japan to somewhere that was flying to America. And like to get around isolation rules as well, you can fly to certain points, isolate there, and then fly over, which I think they did with Tony as well, or they did that with Osprey going to Japan for the G1 and things like that. It's a lot harder to get people to places like Japan than it is the States.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But we move on to a someone similar to Devlin as we move on to Austin Theory versus Johnny Gargano. The match pretty much built on Theory being Johnny Jr. Like Gargano liking Austin Theory and saying that he sees a lot of himself in him, which I'm sure Theory enjoys, but also thinking that he's over cocky. And Gargano questions the fact that Loomis is getting a title shot later tonight when all he's done is kidnap a man, which I thought was nice.
That's nice, I do appreciate that.
Gargano and LeRae spoke before this about both of their respective matches tonight, and they were confident in leaving victorious because of the Gargano way. There was a lot of strong verbal character work between Theory and Gargano. They were really using the fact that there wasn't a lot of crowd noise to interact with each other, which was good. And I hate to say it because I don't like Austin Theory, but this match was really good. Like, really, really good. Technically insane. Two very similar styles that gelled well. Theory almost picked up the win, but Gargano's experience came in because Theory kept going for the ATL and Gargano knew how to escape it, and he turned it into the one last beat. I think this has been Theory's best match since coming back, and it shows that if you give him a good opponent as opposed to like Killian Dane, that he can be pretty good. But also, please give me some story about him, and not the actual story of him. That's not a great idea.
That's the story that they're not going to tell you. You are right. This was Theory's best performance since he's been back. This like the story between like the Gargano and Theory, I guess interactions have were nice in the lead up to it. I am just completely and 100% burnt out on Austin Theory matches. So, while this was technically good, really good, I didn't want to see it because I've seen Austin Theory wrestle for too long every week for what feels like 2 months. Why did he have two matches last week and then another match this week? And I think he wrestled the week before last and XYZ. It keeps going.
WWE are clearly, if SmackDown vs. Raw 2007 taught me anything on GM mode, it's that they know you can't have too much of one superstar on the show without it affecting their like impact. If you use the same person 3 times, they'd go up in red. And yet Austin Theory, they're like, so on Monday I had Austin Theory in a rice cake. On Tuesday I had Austin Theory. It's weird because when NXT first went live, you almost had like two rosters that alternated what like week by week, And it, like, it wasn't great in that sometimes storylines dried out a bit long, but it was good in that you didn't get burnt out very quickly and that you got a week to look forward to seeing your favorite again. So I feel like I'm not saying do an NXT brand split. What I'm saying is just maybe have a mental note of like 1 week on, 1 week off, unless you're in a major story.
Well, that's the thing. When you're with Austin Theory, it's not that like, because some people were on each week, but their length of time they were on the screen was different. So, for example, you look at someone like Rhea Ripley or Raquel, who are going to be next, who were in a highly prominent match last week, and they wrestled and they had segments and stuff like that. And then this week, they got a quick 60-second thing to build up a match in a couple of weeks. Enough to keep them on the show, to keep the story in your mind, but also not enough to burn you out on it because they're on every week. With Austin Theory, what I would maybe like is instead of next week, the one thing I do not want is another 15-minute, 2 or 3 segment Austin Theory match. If I do, I'll blow my brains out. Because what I would like now is for him, because he keeps losing. So what I would like him to do next week is to have a 60 to 90 second promo package or an interview segment. Something that doesn't drag on too long to explain where his mindset is, what he's doing, what he's going to do now because of his constant losses. I don't want another match of him losing next week because I will go insane.
It's just... Like, this match was good, but see if I hadn't had two Theory matches last week. Would have been great.
Yeah.
Because I would have been like, oh, Theory, this will be good. And like, I'm getting to the point where I can, you know, separate artist and art and all that and just try and think, is this a good match? Because if I just think I can't enjoy this, then it makes the fucking show miserable. There's enough bad people in wrestling and like the bad people need to be punished and that should happen. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it shouldn't, but from a personal watching point of view, like, I watch on Watch Wrestling. They're not getting a click from me anyway. So if I at least don't punish myself internally for enjoying something, then it makes the show slightly better. But you're right, we did get a short little segment from Raquel and... Well, specifically Raquel to start with. Basically challenging Rhea to match at Halloween Havoc. And then it deadpans over to Rhea, who says yes, and they start brawling and get pulled apart. Brilliant. This is the match that this has been very logically leading to. Basically, the two hostages of...
The hostages.
Of NXT colliding. Team R&R, which they mentioned, or Barrett did, because once again, Barrett's great.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember, I've just seen it in my notes there, and I forgot that I had this idea. You know how we're getting this Candice Indy Hartwell thing that we'll talk about later?
Mm-hmm.
You could very much give Gargano Austin Theory as a protege.
Yeah, you could.
Like, and then you can have Indy Hartwell and Austin Theory be like this little tag team, and then they can like maybe like start to like each other and do a little smooch thing. And you could do a funny thing with the Gargano's being like, "That's your stepbrother."
Okay.
What is she doing at the washing machine? That started up here and went down there, but you get the point.
There's
mileage in it.
I think there's something there. I don't know if it'll go in that direction, but there might be something there. Because, yeah, give Austin Theory a story. It's doing wonders for Indy. But, I mean, Candice and Shotzi was next on the run sheet anyway. Candice versus Shotzi, the winner will face Io at Halloween Havoc for the title. What I loved about this match, other than the wrestling is phenomenal because they're both really good and it was a really, really good match. It was my favourite thing on the show. What I loved about this is I did not know who was going to win because both were really, really plausible options. Accentuate Shotzi being the host of Halloween and she's got a title shot on Halloween and... It's that like that would go together. Candice winning and getting a rematch Indy getting involved and helping her win was also plausible. So watching the match and not knowing who was gonna win was fantastic, and the finish was lovely. It's Indy basically, who's in the crowd, passes Brass Knucks over, and Candace hits Shotzi with them, and she wins, and it's simple, effective heel work, sneakiness. I'm a sucker for Brass Knucks. She clearly stole them from William Regal's office. It was
This is the one thing that annoyed me. We get William Regal backstage later on, right? And we'll tie it in here because it relates immediately to this. And he says that he is annoyed at the fact that's how the match ended, but the referee's decision is final, so we'll get Io and Candice clashing at Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
Why did he not address the fact that, like, it was his thing? Why couldn't he just say something as simple as, you know, I should be disappointed, but I can't be a hypocrite, and we all know where she's learned that trick from. Like,
yeah, that would have been just something very simple and very nice. I'm just nitpicking here. I would have if Candace kept the Brass Knucks on her, and then at the last segment of the show, he's like, hand them over. Thank you. Don't stay out of my office.
Puts them back on, and he's like,
my babies. That would be lovely. But that's nitpicking. It's not a huge detail, but it was really nice. It establishes the Candace and Indy thing, which was set up over the last few weeks. Indy's proving herself. It's good stuff. Really good stuff.
Yes. And speaking of good stuff, I fucking hate that I have to say this. We get a Drake Maverick and Killian Dane marketing meeting.
Oh my god!
And, you know, they're drawing in on my degree, so you know immediately I'm interested. Maverick states that he's taken the tag team with Dane very seriously, and he wants to make some marketing and branding changes to make them more appealable to the audience.
Oh.
He shows off some merchandise ideas, and then comes up with their tag team name, The Fury and The Furry.
Lost it. I popped big for that name. And also the cartoon where he's bulging from the shirts and the outfits and everything. It's really good. I have been in those kinds of meetings before where you're pitching things and stuff before. To see it I go like that. Drake Maverick is magic.
Nah, Drake didn't turn around and go, right, Killian, we aren't the Rockers. We are Kevin Nash and Shawn Michaels.
Mm.
We aren't Evolution. We are DX. But, no, Dane remains perfectly deadpan and emotionless throughout, which works perfectly. And then Maverick just goes, yeah, we got a match with Imperium later tonight, by the way. And Dane's like, what? You know what? I owe them an apology. I own Dane an apology more than Maverick. We've all said Maverick's very funny, but Dane has actually been interesting in making this work, which I really like. The contrast between their energy and Dane's apparent lack of interest works perfectly. And I'm just kind of, I'm all for it, because it's not about them wrestling, so it's not like a random 8-minute Killian Dane match where I just want to shoot my head out. It's like a 4-minute Killian Dane and Drake Maverick match with a great... It's kind of Robert Stone brand-esque. Mm. It's like... It's that mismatched tag team just without the manager. And I'm excited to see where they go from there.
Yeah, it's almost like they've taken the energy and the effort and the care that they were putting into the Robert Stone story... but transferred it to Killian Dane and Drake Maverick. Because as we see in the next segment...
They don't give a fuck about Robert Stone anymore.
It feels like the Rhea Ripley thing, the cage match, was the finale of this of that brand for whatever reason, even though we loved it. And I think the people loved it as well. He was going all in on it. It was great.
Yeah. Everyone had a positive thing to say about it. And, like, I don't have a problem with... Because it's Tony Storm versus Aaliyah. I don't have a problem with Aaliyah losing, no. Right? Do I think it should have been more than 2 minutes and she maybe should have got a bit more of like sneaky heel offense? And yes, because that's what's been good about the Robert Stone brand is Aaliyah has been improving. Also, I don't know whose fault it is if Aaliyah didn't go light enough.
Yeah, that was terrifying.
Tony didn't lift her properly. It was a very scary tiger driver.
Mm.
But Stone gets a pre-match promo reminding people why the Robert Stone brand's a place to be. William Regal comes out, not William Regal, Wade Barrett comes out with this lovely off-the-cuff comment that Robert Stone got him an extra zero on his return contract to the WWE, which was lovely. Tony comes out with new entrance and ring gear, which includes cinematic buckshot, because Ty clearly directs their entrance.
The replies on the NXT Twitter for anything Tony Storm related is a minefield to avoid. But yeah, it's a new entry, and you know what? Like, WWE entrance music in 2020, 9 times out of 10, is fucking horrendous because it's generic metal theme number 6 from the old SmackDown games. It's really bad. They need to pay whatever CFOs want to get them back because they were doing a good job. So the entrance theme for Tony Storm wasn't terrible. I like the new music was not bad at all. So I will pay them that. Also Ember Moon's wasn't bad either. They seem to put more effort into
Embers was
NXT.
solid.
Yeah, so maybe they're just putting more effort into the NXT themes rather than the main roster themes. Could be that. But yeah, the match was quick. Tony Storm wins. She keeps saying Tony time. And we'll eventually see where Tony goes. But it just again, it's more women's division stuff showing the stacked roster that they do have. I would just like the world for the Robert Stone brand and Aaliyah. They need a third person, and I hope they get a third person soon.
I hope we get Mercedes back. Just slot her back in.
Yeah,
It works.
pretend it didn't
You
happen.
can do funny, you can do funny stuff, referencing fucking Slapjack Mulligan or whatever her name was.
I think her name was going to be
But
Retaliation or something.
yeah. So in the aforementioned segment with Regal, we get the announcement that he's considering adding a stipulation to Candice's title match as punishment. He's just not sure what yet. More on that at the end of the show. And then Xia Li appears alongside Boa in a suit. Now, Boa goes onto the list of WWE superstars who can pull off a suit very well, along with Jordan Omagobahan and the Hurt Business. But Xia cuts a pretty solid promo. Like, it's nothing special, but like from what we've seen from Xia before,
For English as
it's
well.
very solid. Yeah, like not in her native language. She just explains that she goes to Regal, "I need a match for next week," and he goes, "I'll consider it." And she's like, "No, I need a match for next week." And he's like, "I'll consider it." And she's like, "Please, Mr. Regal, I need a match for next week." And he goes, "Okay, let me think about it," and walks away. I don't know where this is going. If like the I like the idea that like Zaya's been told that if she doesn't, like, Zaya works for some secret organization, and if she doesn't start winning, they're gonna replace her. Like something like that. And that's the role that Boa plays. It's interesting. It almost feels like if it was like she was like 10 years younger, that it would be something like her parents have said, if she doesn't start winning, they're going to pull her out and bring her back. Like, it has a little bit of that ever so slightly. This could go down a horribly racist route, but I trust them that it's just going to be something interesting.
It's almost like she's not in control of whatever the thing that is troubling her.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting thing. It looks like Bo is in control, or at least the messenger of something. So
Yeah.
that's interesting. It's just something like this, it is so simple. Lower card women's division, like there's main event with Io Shirai, Ember Moon and stuff. There's mid card stuff with Tony Storm and Raquel Gonzalez and that kind of thing. And then there's lower card stuff where we've seen the thing with Casey and Caden and stuff, and
Yeah.
now Xia Li getting a little story with little progressions each week. Her losing, her not shaking the hand, that she receives a letter that makes her concerned, the going up to Regal this week. All little individual things to build up a story to work out what's going on here. The care and effort that they put into the women's division should absolutely be applauded, because just little things like that are perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, exactly. It's that thing where they're making me care about someone that only Die cared about, and that's
Yes.
impressive. Worth noting that 24 minutes ago, Ciampa, Kushida, and Dream are set to clash next week or this week on NXT. I was checking to see if anything had been announced regarding Xia Li getting a match, but nothing at current. But yes, we get that triple threat, which should be fun. So we cut back to the Fury and the Furry, and they are handily defeated by Imperium in 3 minutes 44. The focus of the match is kind of the conflict between Maverick and Dane in terms of like Dane just wanting to wrestle and Maverick just being a bit overenthusiastic, tagging him when he shouldn't and things. And then also there's that clash of purist wrestlers Imperium and the Furry and the Fury, and Imperium win, which is good. They shouldn't be losing to a mismatched tag team this early on. Drake Maverick has the incredible ability to get stronger by taking losses anyway, like it suits the character. But the most of this is comes down to the little post-match segment, which is Ever Rise come out to beat down Maverick now that Dane's taken out on the outside, and they're like, "We're gonna beat you up, boy." And then Dane hits him with a running double clothesline, and goes over to Dane, goes over to Maverick, who looks terrified, and goes, "Nobody hits you but me." Like a beautiful, I'm fairly sure Jordan Devlin said something similar to
Liam,
that. Stone Cold Steve Austin, people
we
are less offended though.
can't.
It's an hour and 50 minutes in, no one's listening this far, it's fine.
That's a good point. Jesus Christ, I can't acknowledge that. But no, it's like, look, I appreciate, again, it's Dane also reacting to this, and also shows that Maverick is growing on Dane a little bit. He's starting to be treated like a little brother in a way. He'll hit him, but he cares. And like nobody hits you but me. And like that, like, oh, it's a good little thing that they set up there. That's really, really nice. You're right, Imperium should not be losing to a mismatched tag team at this point. I know that they just lost to Breezango a few times, but they shouldn't be losing to these, to Furry and the Fury at this point.
There's a difference between Breezango and the Furry and the Fury. Like they
But
are
look at this,
similar in
by the
terms of
way,
where they started,
there's
but
now
like one's what,
another
5 years down the line or something.
I also look at this, there's more tag teams. There's Everrise starting to get a little bit of a resemblance of a story. Furry and the Fury, Imperium, we had Undisputed Era before, Lurch and Lorcan, Breezango are champs. It would be nice if they just tried, but you know.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe if we merged AEW and NXT, we'd get like the best wrestling show ever.
Yeah, right?
And after this, we get into our main event, and this is where all joy in me leaves because it's Damian Priest defeating Dexter Lumis via pinfall to retain the NXT North American Championship in 12 minutes. Damian Priest tries to use his ranger advantage early on to control Lumis, targeting the injured ankle from that like botched dive to the outside to come out. Priest nearly taps to the katakatami before making the rope break. While Lumis rests there, Grimes hits him with a cave and out of nowhere. Priest, who doesn't realize that Grimes has got involved, capitalizes to pick up the win. As Priest goes the way up the ramp to celebrate, he's attacked from behind by a steel chair by Gargano and LeRae. Regal comes out, condemning the actions of the Garganos, confirming at Halloween Havoc they will get their rematches for the title, but there's one stipulation. Cut to Shotzi Blackheart with the spin the wheel, make a deal, and then the either most deliberately uncomfortable promo or just a not very good promo, Shotzi says, "Hello, spin the wheel, make a wheel, it's your doom." The match is dog shit, right? Dexter Lumis is not good. I've realised he is so one-dimensional in ring and so slow that I've realised that I've been blaming his opponents and things like him versus Austin Theory wasn't very good. Him versus Priest here wasn't very. It's just him. He is a great character actor, but he shouldn't wrestle. Especially not 10-minute main events where they just feel so slow.
Well,
so slow.
Yeah, I think Dexter Lumis is done dirty by they keep putting him in these long matches, which he should not be in. Dexter Lumis, let him be a character, let him be creepy. That story, they were setting up something before Twitter happened with Dexter Lumis and Velveteen Dream. That was building to something and then it got dropped. But I think Dexter Lumis is more effective as a weird character who wrestles once every so often. Like, once every couple of months kind of thing. He's a character. Let him be a character. Don't make him wrestle long main events. It's a bad idea. Still not into Damian Priest. I accept that he has been better in the last few weeks than he has been in the last 6 months. But also, I'm just not into him, and I would like him to please get... I don't want him as champ anymore. I know a lot of people like him for whatever reason, but I'm just not into him, and he has go away heat. Not to the level of Austin Theory go away heat, but like he has, I would rather flick to AEW heat with me than watch a Damian Priest match. Yeah.
And you know what? Priest against the right opponent, great. Lumis, not very great. Mm. So therefore, the two of them together was just boring.
Yeah.
Also, whatever happened to Thick Boy? He's just disappeared, isn't he?
I don't know, probably COVID at this point. Like, if someone's away for several weeks at a time, we'll just say COVID. It's a very fair point. Let's talk about Spin the Wheel, Make a Deal. I am so excited for Raw Roulette to come back. Now, I actually have on here, I got this prepared earlier, the match options for that are on the Spin the Wheel, Make a Deal wheel. So we can actually have a look and see what could possibly be on that wheel. So on there we have as follows. We have a casket match, a chamber of horrors, a biker's chain match, a buried alive match, a devil's playground match, a boiler room brawl, Shotzi's choice, which I like, because it sounds like Sophie's choice, weapons wild match, which I guess is just like extreme rules, a trickle street fight, which as I predicted, TLS, which is tables, ladders, and... Oh, tables, ladders, and scares.
Scares. I wrote this segment.
And coal miner's glove on a pole match, and a blindfold match. So those are the options for both the Gargano's matches this week. Of those, what match would you like to be assigned to which?
So, I think Priest versus Gargano would be a wonderful casket match, because that would then lead to, like, PTSD Gargano segments, which I'm all for.
Sure, why not?
Him and Gargano are in bed at night, and she goes to turn the light off, and he's like, no, keep it on, keep it on. So alone. I kind of want to see what Shotzi's choice would be, because Io Shirai versus Candice LeRae in a tank match. Now that's what I want. what I think it'll be, I think we'll get Candice versus Io in a trick or street fight.
Okay, yep.
Because it's just a street fight. And then I think we'll get Gargano Priest in a boiler room brawl.
Okay, nice. I think we'll get Candice and Io in a TLS match. Tables, ladders, and scares.
Yeah, true.
I think that'll be fun. And I think you're right with the PTSD stuff with Gargano. God, why do you have so many good ideas? I reckon if they want to pop a rating for Halloween Havoc, if they spin the wheel early in the night and pump it, it's going to be Gargano and Priest in a buried alive match on TV. That'll get some people to, like, switching over.
People would.
So.
Especially because if I look at the trustiest source in all of wrestling, Cage Match,
Yes, naturally.
I don't think anything mental is announced for this week's edition of, it'll be the 21st day of Dynamite, if I have a look here. Oh, it's the World Title Eliminator. So, Omega Janela, Penta Phoenix, which will be good, Cabana Page, Wardlow Jungle Boy, and then a Fatal 4-Way Tag Match. Like the stuff has stakes, but there's nothing other than the Lucha Bros match on there that's like, oh, that's really good. So, perfect show to try and steal some audience over.
I think I just realized because I was trying to work out like was the Chamber of Horrors match a one of the cinematic matches that we've had over the last 6 months? But I realized no, the Chamber of Horrors match was that one from WCW way back when, where the loser where you, the only way to win is to electrocute your opponent in the
Yes.
thing that Abdullah the Butcher got like in the early 90s in WCW. So I don't think it's gonna be that. Though nice little shout out. I do appreciate that. But yeah.
Even something like the blindfold match with fucking James Storm and fucking Wildcat Chris Harris, like
Oh God. Oh my goodness, no.
I'm disappointed Electrified Steel Cage isn't on there.
Yeah, right. You would think Boneyard match would be in there, but you know. But I think yeah, I would like to see TLS and Buried Alive. They're the ones that I think that'll get people going really intrigued by those options. So
Yeah. But that wraps up another week of NXT. A pretty fine episode, but not like, yeah, that was fine. Like, it was fine.
I am
That was good.
yeah.
That was good.
For us just being out of a takeover and we're not far away from Halloween Havoc, I'm very excited for Halloween Havoc because I want to see
Yes.
what that's gonna be. Because I was a as a kid, I was a sucker for Raw Roulette. That shit always made me like, okay, I really need to watch Raw. What are they gonna spin it to be? That kind of thing. There's something about that concept that really like I really enjoyed. So to have this in some kind of way for Halloween Havoc, I'm very excited about. So to go from we just had to go from a takeover to Halloween Havoc in a matter of several weeks. I'm impressed. The tag team division I wish was better. Next week I am worried about Breezango. I hope they retain. I'm not confident that they will. I'm not super into the mid-card at the moment of NXT. The mid-card is a bit of a dead spot for me, and the main event, like in the like the male main event scene, is very concerning with the uncertainty of Finn Balor and what that could possibly lead to, because it's hard to plan for the future where you don't know who the champion's gonna be in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, exactly. I, before we plug our socials, want to end on a closing request, Mr. William Regal, that we get a Halloween Battle Royal where everyone dresses up as old wrestlers.
Absolutely.
You did it on house shows, and Rhea Ripley's Triple H, for example, exceptional. I would like to see that, and I would like to see Robert Stone and Aaliyah come out as like Shawn Michaels and Luna Vachon, but Robert Stone is Luna Vachon, like.
Why
There's so much you
not?
can do. The show is going to be fucking ridiculous. Like, go all out with it. Have fun. That's what wrestling's all about at the end of the day. You can follow me on Twitter at Liam A. Stewart. You can follow me on Instagram at Liam ALX Stewart. Make sure to check out ITRWrestling.com for all my latest articles and specifically my love letter to the NXT Women's Division. Michael, would you like to plug your Twitter and TikTok?
Yeah, why not? You can find me on Twitter at MichaelFarrah92. Same for TikTok. Instagram's just at MichaelFarrah, because I don't need the 92 for that one. Managed to snag that one. Hopefully I'll be employed at some stage. Sorry, I've at the point where I'm really bored at the moment, so I need stuff to do.
Oh yeah, I might as well ask you on air because why not? Kenny asked me to ask if you want to write for itrwrestling.com. So if you're
What?
looking for things to do, If you're looking for things to do, because
Did he actually?
we
Because like
agreed.
he could have just
Yeah.
messaged
So, or what it was is so. Just do this on air, fuck it.
Yeah, do it.
Me and Ines were basically trying to get some mods in so that we can not have to focus on the community and can focus on, like, the live tweets and stuff like this, stuff that we're actually working for.
Yeah.
We got the two that we had agreed on, and then we remembered that we'd mentioned it to you.
Yeah.
So I had said, Kenny was going to suggest Michael Farr as a mod to cover the overnight time. He's currently unemployed as fuck, so lots of free time to help us. Exact words. He put, yeah, defo, he's perfect. Do you think Michael would be up for writing? And I put, worth a shot. Can't say I've seen him write, but with working in media, he can't be bad. I'm recording with him tomorrow. I'll gauge interest for you. So, there you are. You've got that to consider if you're looking for something to fill some time.
I was saying this as a joke, and then we accidentally got a mini job offer going.
Exactly.
That's crazy. Well, we will continue this conversation off air. But wow, what a cliffhanger to leave the listeners of DevPod on. Will Michael accept and join Inside the Ropes? Because at the moment, I am the only person on the DevPod who is not in some way employed by Inside the Ropes.
I realize we need someone to play us out.
Yes.
You know what? This is a rogue thing. We're gonna play it out by William Regal Sleeve, because the Brass
Fuck
Knucks
it.
are the closest we're ever gonna get to William Regal. So, and it's our podcast. Fucking, we can do what we want. He's a man, such a manly man, and he's
We're
here
getting we're
to
doing
play us
I was gonna
out.
say we're playing the heel William Regal theme that he comes out to now, yeah.
Yeah,
Okay, good. Just double
the
checking.
do. Yeah. So, thank you very much for listening. He's been Michael Farr. I've been Liam A. Stewart. This has been the Develop Podcast, Developmental Podcast. Make sure to check us out on Twitter at Develop Podcast. Leave a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify, and any podcast providers you may use. It really helps with the algorithm. So, as always, please remember to be good people.
Thank you.